Hello, Internet, and welcome to another episode of All My Issues. In this episode, episode 37, we got the chance to talk to Daryl Banks. And not only talk with him, but we actually hosted a panel, a discussion panel for Daryl Banks at this past weekend's All-American in Youngstown, Ohio. But before we get started, I wanted to mention a few things that we have going on right now. If you want to help support us, if you like our podcast, you can check us out and support us at our Patreon account. And that's just patreon.com/allmyissues, no spaces. And you can support us there and you can get some cool stuff and access to additional content that we don't have posted on our website. All right, now with that out of the way, let's get started. Hello, I'm Rick.
I'm Chris.
I'm Sam.
All right, and we are here with Daryl Banks.
Hello, everybody.
Hi. Yay.
So I guess we'll go ahead and get started with the questions.
All right.
Columbus.
Yes, Columbus, born and raised. That's correct.
Tell us about your background and what
Ohio's own.
Yeah, Ohio's own.
Yes,
Columbus.
Yes.
That's
OH. Right. OH. IO. Yeah, come on, let me hear it. All right. Columbus, Ohio in the house.
Yeah, when did you first fall in love with art?
I always felt that all kids love art. It's just like, I think just a natural progression. It's just, I never outgrew it or never matured past it. Depends on how you look at it. You know, all little kids start with their crayons or what have you. But, you know, with me, I just always enjoyed the expression that art brings, you know, particularly drawing. So it was something that I always had an interest in, and it wasn't until really high school where I decided this is the, you know, I actually want to follow comics in particular as a discipline to study. Because, you know, back then in the 1800s when I was growing up, there were no, you know, you didn't have conventions a lot in the Columbus area. So a lot of it was just word of mouth or what I assumed you had to train, you know, for the comic discipline. So.
So, what comic books were you heavily into when you were younger?
Oh, that's an easy one. I grew up, it was all about Spider-Man. It's one of those things where I would love to go back in time and tell myself about the new movie, that sort of thing. And also Avengers, Spider-Man and the Avengers. That's just, you know, of course, you know, there were other characters, you know, a lot of the mainstream American comics. But pretty much I was a Spider-Man Avengers type of guy growing up.
Did you see the new movie?
No, I have not. And what's funny is my hotel is right next to the theater showing it. I mean, walking distance. I could have just, last night I thought about it, but I'd already planned on taking my family to see it in a couple of weeks. So I'll just wait. Yeah.
It's very good.
Yeah.
That's all I'll say. So as you started to get into your art, which artists were your biggest inspirations?
My first influence, I would say, in elementary school was John Romita Sr. Even if you weren't an avid collector, you've seen his work even on products, you know, shirts, lunch boxes, what have you. And I just thought his style has a definitive feel to it. And to this day, I mean, I've done shows in comedy. I'm afraid to come up to him because I get starstruck very easily. I've even had horror stories of having a, you could say, a meltdown, but between my heroes. I remember it all started with, let's see, it may have been at the Mid-OhioCon in Columbus. Keith Pollard was there.
Okay.
And, you know, growing up on his work on Spectacular Spider-Man, Thor, what have you. So I see him. This is the first time we're at the same event at the same time. I thought, I'm going to go over there, and I'm going to introduce myself. We're colleagues now. And I was fine at the initial, you know, at the initial introduction. And then I looked down, and he has original pages from the run of stuff that I grew up on. I remember getting on my bicycle with allowance money and going to the, you know, to the local drugstore or whatever, buying the comics. And what proceeded out of my mouth at that time, it wasn't grammatical. It wasn't humorous. It was more like an awkward moment where you think, shouldn't he have handlers, medication? So, I mean, I almost don't remember everything I said. It was kind of like, you drew the one Thor issue where it was that street, Michigan Avenue, something like that. It was something like that. And he's kind of like looking around as people are like, what? And you remember Christmas Story? Ralphie, you're blowing it. Ralphie, you're blowing it. That was going on in my head at the time. So fun time. But yeah, John Romita Sr. was my first influence. You know, childhood. Growing up, I would say probably Alan Davis, John Byrne, Joyce Perez, guys like that. You know, those who could really, I'd say artists who really had a sense of what I call magnitude to their work. You know, when you see, I mean, George Perez could draw a garbage can, and it feels like, but it's probably a cosmic garbage can because it just, it just has a feel of importance, I guess. Yeah. I'm like, I want to draw that way. You know, just, I don't know what is it about it. You know, there's more to it because he drew it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Crisis on Infinite Garbage, you know. just something, it just had that kind of importance to it. Same with John Byrne. I think artists like that really inspired me. Like, I want to learn how to do this.
Yeah. So, talk to us a little bit about the process of breaking into the comics industry. Because I don't know about anybody else up here, but when I was a kid, the comics industry just seemed like something that was
big and magical.
Big and magical and over there.
Yeah. Big, magical, and the unattainable part hasn't actually changed. Unfortunately, I would say it's harder now than it was when I did it. However, pick a profession. It's going to be difficult. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it's worth doing, there's a level of challenge to it. And that's a good thing, and I'll tell you why. If you're talking about a career as opposed to a job, you've got to have a passion for it, and it's going to be tough. It's going to be boring. It's going to be something that you're going to want to pull your hair out, And I think by having it, difficult, it'll show you how bad you want it. And so, as opposed to something that you can take it or leave it, because with art, it's something that you've got to take it and take it. It can't be a take it or leave it. It's an all in type of thing, especially if you want to do it well to really match the ideas you have in your head, the dreams that you have for yourself. Fortunately, when you do that sort of thing, you'll discover you're also inspiring someone else to do the same. It's not just art, it's just anything. If you're pursuing something that's above the norm, you're inspiring somebody somewhere. You may not know it. Mm-hmm. That's something I really just come to understand just in recent years, just based on things, feedback I'm hearing from others who pursue things. It could be anything. It could be cooking. It could be starting a business. Chances are, if it's hard to do and you did it, somebody is watching you and someone is inspiring. And so with comics, there's so many people that like it, pursuing that. I think it's helpful to other artists and others to pursue it, to get past the tough parts.
So is there a process that you have to go through, I guess, to get seen? Or I know you started with the independent comics.
Right.
Is that what got you noticed at DC, do you think? Or
I thought it did. It really, because it's with the art side of it, I'm not sure about the writing, but the art side is so organic. I can't say, okay, if you want to do comics, you have to do this, finish line. Mm-hmm. It just seems like I've heard 100 stories and 99 are different. There are some that come from high school and go right to the Marvel. Those I want to strangle. with me, I decided in high school I wanted to do it, and I didn't get published until a year after I finished college. And even then, it was still at companies you've never heard of. People know me for my DC work, but that was a half a decade later after I wouldn't say laboring in independence, because I worked on some really fun stuff, especially my time at Millennium Comics, where I got to work with licensed properties like the Wild Wild West based on an old TV show.
I was going to bring that up because I love that television show.
Yes. Yeah, that was challenging. It was like going back to school. I mean, especially working on Doc Savage, Man of Bronze from Millennium. That had a bigger following than I thought. I mean, that we still get feedback about to this day. So working in independence, it helped more experience. More, it's not like DC was sitting watching, how is he doing it? It comes down to what samples did you show them. there was a time where DC and Marvel they did a lot of conventions. I mean, it didn't have to be big New York shows. They might even come to the show of this size. I mean, it was a time they were really heavy about recruiting, and you could take time to show them portfolios. Now, I always noticed that DC could give more constructive criticism. I mean, nothing against Marvel. My goal was to work with Marvel. That was, when I got my degree, I'm like, I'm going to go work for Marvel. I'm going to draw Avengers. That was the goal. That was the dream. And it was kind of like every time I showed them work, they looked at it and it was like, nice, next, because it was always a line. DC, they told me what the weaknesses my work had, what I could do about it, and they gave me a business card if I felt that I have improved in those areas to get back with them. And I remember it was in Rosemont, Illinois. There was an old Chicago con, and there was an editor by the name of Mike Gold. I was sitting there holding his business card, and I thought, I'm going to end up with DC more than Marvel, aren't I? But that's not a bad thing, and it wasn't.
So when you started at DC, you started on the Legion of Superheroes, right. Correct?
That was the first thing I did for DC, sure was.
Okay, so how did that lead into you getting Green Lantern? Do you know the story behind that?
Oh, I'd never forget that. It feels like it was yesterday. It's hard to believe how many years have passed. It really does. It all began with, there was a convention I did in Akron, Ohio. And it was called the Akron Canton Con. And I remember it was a small show, but it had a stellar lineup. We're talking Stephen Butler, who was doing Spider-Man at the time, Ron Garney, who was doing Ghost Rider, Travis Charest. This is before he was really big. He was doing Dark Stars for DC. This is before any of his X-Men stuff. Who else? You had Gene Ha, Barry Kitson. I mean, it was when I stopped to think, like, all those weird, it was all in one show, and it was every year. And so, I'm around these guys, and I'm just soaking it up. And of course, I'm showing them stuff, getting critiques, especially Brian Stelfreeze. I think every time I saw him, he was like, oh, here he comes again. Like, can you help me work? Because I had a list of things I need to work on, and they were always very helpful. But the thing I remember most is there was a writer, it was a husband and wife team, Tom and Mary Beerbaum. They were writing Legion at the time. So because they were there, I was going around telling people when they were at a distance, well, I'm going to be working with Tom and Barry on Legion. Well, are you? Yeah. Matter of fact, next year, because I did the show every year, I'll be talking about my work on Legion. I was signing work by Daryl Banks, the next artist on Legion of Superhero. It was fun. I'm like,
hey, putting it out there.
Yeah, I just put it out there because I felt confident. But on the other hand, I'm like, you're lying. But there's faith and then there's a lie, which is this. So I thought, You're telling everybody this. Well, what if it doesn't work? No, it's going to, And so, I would talk to them, but, they were like, they see artists all the time, seasoned professionals, but I just said it would be great working with them. So fast forward, I finally get, I think I sent tons of samples to DC, and the assistant editor, I believe his name was Mike McAvaney, he said, well, we're looking for fill-in artists to help, pad out this issue. We're just, guys doing 3 or 4 pages at a time. Would you be interested? Would I be interested? I had just been working at Wendy's. It's like, yeah, I'm interested. So, I got a chance to do a couple pages, and I turned it around. And said, oh, you did that pretty fast. We like what you did. Do you want to do more? Do I want to do more? Yeah. So, I did it, and it became more filling things. However, as much as I enjoyed doing the Legion, I was always talking to the assistant editor that I really wanted to do Green Lantern. And in my mind, I'm like, I probably have to be at this company for about 5 years or so before they're willing to entertain what I want to do. Right now you do what they want you to do. So I would talk about ideas like, if I was drawing Green Lantern, I would do this, that, and the other. Well, I didn't know that assistant editor, I believe his name was Eddie Berganza. He was also the Green Lantern assistant editor, but he didn't tell me that. It's like he's taking this all in. He's like, okay, all right, you don't know you're doing an audition, but okay, we'll tell you later. So, I did Legion fill-in for a while, and then they finally said, hey, are you interested in Green Lantern? But the interesting thing is the Legion stuff I did was written by none other than Tom and Mary Beerbaum. So when I see them again, I'm like, big hug. Thanks for getting me at DC. What are you talking about? You put in the good word for me, right? No. Yeah, we, matter of fact, I don't think they remember the conversation. So you figure, like, like there's no way. It's like, so you know, I figured that well, they made that happen. They're like, no, not at all. So
you were like Babe Ruth just pointing at the outfield with the relationship.
There you go.
Working with Ron Mars, which led to a rather lengthy working relationship. Can you maybe describe that?
Actually, the first writer I was working with, I believe his name was Jerry Conway.
Oh, yeah.
This was they DC knew they wanted to do something with Green Lantern, but they didn't know what. Now, remember, at that time, everything was just on shaky ground because of the death of Superman. That was a crossover that was in all the DC titles. And every title it crossed over, the sales went... So the suits and the bean counters were like, what can we do to make that happen all the time? So, you know, a lot of books were you know, having the, you know, I mean, it was the 90s. It was, you know, gimmick to the left would be gimmick to the right. Remember foil covers and holograms and trading cards and the slip covers. I mean, that was how it was. So
coupons
for whatever. You can get a free this or that and the other. So DC knew the sales on Green Lantern weren't doing so well, so they knew they wanted to shake things up, wasn't sure how. So I got a script from, like I said, I hope I'm not misnaming it. I believe it was Jerry Conway. That may not be right. Jerry Jones. I think it was Gerard Jones. I think that sounds more accurate. Anyway, the idea was to create a new Green Lantern. But it still wasn't what DC was satisfied with. I actually did some pages, but it was never published. And they were like, we're going to take this whole thing back to formula. We're going to, you know, still, you know, have things shaking things up, but we're going to create a new lantern and something's going to happen to Hal Jordan. And it was like, what do you mean? You know, I mean, I wasn't the biggest Green Lantern fan, but I liked Hal Jordan. You know, he was in the Super Friends. You know? Yeah. So, you know, what do you mean something's going to happen? You're not going to kill him. It's like, well, yeah, you know, he's not going to die. He's going to change. And, you know, there might be, you know, something might happen to core members. And I'm like, well, that's understandable. As long as nothing happens to Kilowog, I'm fine. And so I'm thinking they're messing with me. He goes, no, he'll be the first casualty. I'm thinking he's messing with me. The editor, I'm like, oh, because I said that. Like, oh, it would be the very one. Like, no, that's the plan. Oh, man. But don't worry, he got better. Kilowog got better. But yeah, that's, you know, that began something that I really thought would last about a year. I figured, because it was, like I said, the 90s gimmicks here and there. I figured we'll do this Kyle Rayner thing and it'll last about a year. I'll go on to something else, and then Hal will go back to how things were in the story. And here we are, 2017. Kyle Rayner's still around? Yeah. Like, what? It's like, I still can't believe. Like, is that really? Well, how'd that happen? No, I have to insert the fact that we never approached it like a gimmick. There were gimmicks going on, but we, you know, it's like anything worth doing is worth doing right. So we did what we really enjoyed doing. I mean, Ron Mars is a writer, but he thinks very visually. So, I mean, we just, you know, we thought, what's going to be fun? What's going to, it's like when Stan Lee created Spider-Man, Amazing Fantasy was a book that wasn't doing well. The editor said, do whatever you feel like doing. When you have that creative freedom, I think that's where some of the magic can happen.
I think it's one of the examples, unlike maybe the death and rebirth of Superman, where people look at massive change with the characters, but they look back at it fondly. And that probably comes from the decision to go at it from that method, you know? So. Mm-hmm.
You know, like working with working with Ron and stuff like that. How does the relationship work? Like how much input did you have in the direction of the story, and just the development of the characters and stuff like that? How did that play out?
Well, honestly, I was just glad to be there. Really, I mean, just being real. Just before that, you know, even doing the independent stuff, I worked part time at Marshall's, you know, in the shoe department. I was just glad to be there. You know, they gave me creative input as far as design, but as far as story, not so much. But one thing I liked working about Ron is he would bounce ideas off and be like, "What do you think of this? What do you think of that?" And he didn't have to; he just felt like it. So he thought if I like what I'm drawing, the drawings will be better. I mean, that sounds obvious, but not a lot of writers do that. You know, I probably can only think of maybe two, maybe three writers I've ever worked with that had that approach. But you know, mine was more and also naming things, because the suits had their ideas, and then the creative, like the editors, had another. And sometimes the twain didn't always meet. Parallax wasn't going to be called Parallax initially. DC owned the rights to the name Protector. I think it was an unused Teen Titans character. And they thought, whatever Hal Jordan becomes, he will be the Protector in the story. We're not discussing it. I'm thinking, but he's not protecting anything. So I thought, you know, I like the name Parallax because it deals with point of view. It's an astrological or astronomical, you know, study of the stars. I picked it out of the dictionary because it started with the letter P. Honestly, that's where I started. Because I was leaning towards Paragon for a second. Like, no, that doesn't make sense either. Parallax, you know. And he did have a change of point of view. So let's call him Parallax. No. Yes. No. Yes. No. I had to write it, you know, physically write. Here's why I think he should be called Parallax. And, you know, they had to think about it. I'm like, okay, we'll call him Parallax. So, you know, fast forward, we get the movie and the creature's called Parallax. I'm like, oh, some guy from Columbus, Ohio talked you into doing that.
That's not exactly what he had in mind, was it?
And the thing with Kyle Rayner's design, there were so many designs to his costume, as simple as it is, started a lot more complex. Parallax, really, that was maybe two sketches, and that was it. I had a clear idea of what I wanted him to look like. The cape came later as the character became more important to the company, because in his first appearance, you'll notice he didn't have a cape. But with Kyle, it was just, I remember, this is mid-90s, so he looked like something that stepped out of Image Comics, and my editor goes, no. He said, we're going to keep it simple, and you will thank me later. Because if you've got to do 22 pages of this guy, you'll thank me that it is this simple. And he was so right. He was so right. My editor's name was Kevin Dooley, by the way, and he was very inspirational in talking me off the ledge for these crazy designs. I look back now and go, oh, God, I didn't want to draw that. So really, Kyle's costume was a combination of various designs, like maybe the mask was from one design, the gauntlets and boots from another, bodysuit, logo, etc. And so they chose the things, the elements they liked of several, and said, well, let's try another design, but incorporate the ones that you came up with. The last thing, that the sticking point with him was his symbol. They wanted to keep the traditional symbol. And I thought, we've come this far, let's completely change it. Well, once again, I don't know. We want to keep the at least keep the logos. But you said so. They thought about, yeah, okay, we'll go with the new logo, which I've seen on shirts, pins, and buttons. Like, see, see. So yeah.
Even Kyle's like story, like as when he got to like the Green Ring, I mean, just his first like villain way through that battle scene, I mean, like very, that's the word to say. I mean, when I first read it, I was like, man, that just went dark real quick when he get the ring, and now.
Well, it's more like our approach was, Hal Jordan is like a test pilot, you know, like the Chuck Yeager hero you wish you were. Kyle is us wishing we were right. That hero.
Yeah.
And that was simple. And really, I mean, we were blatantly inspired by Peter Parker, really. I mean, Alex in the fridge, she was created to be Uncle Ben, really. That was from before. I wasn't the first to draw her. She appeared in issue 48 in a panel. I can't remember the artist's name, but the idea was, you know, Kyle's girlfriend will be the reason he goes from this is entertainment to I've got to be a hero, because there's some things I can't treat this like a joke anymore. And the interesting thing about the whole Alex in the fridge is that went south, unfortunately. I was telling Chris yesterday, when I had drawn that scene, the fridge door was open. You could see her intact. She was dead, but she was intact. And someone saw the artwork and go, no, we can't show that. So have someone, I don't know who it was, draw, you know, a generic door and cover it so you can't see her anymore. Well, you know, I don't know about you, but my fridge isn't big enough to accommodate a body. So the first thing you assume is she's in pieces in there. You know, a head's on one shelf and an arm on it. And so their attempt to censor it made it horrific. And now we're still talking about, it's like, if they had left the art the way it was, we wouldn't be talking about this today in 2017. But that's how that controversy started. It was somebody in editorial, a higher up, not my editor, just said, you know, we got to change this. And I'm like, wow, they made it worse. It's like, they turned it into a trope. It's like, no, if you left it alone, we wouldn't be talking about this today.
So you mentioned the controversy at the time, having how Jordan turn evil and having a having her die, was there, what was the fan reaction? Was there controversy around it, or was it kind of just quiet?
Keep in mind,
enjoy the story.
Keep in mind, anything the fan said was a plus because the book was going, an eyelash away from cancellation. They could have been talking about the, you guys use nice staples in this, but they didn't care. The fact that it was anything discussed about it, it could have been good or bad. People were talking about Green Lantern where they weren't before. So all of a sudden, all these fans that, they were negative letters, but I'm like, I'm thinking, I wasn't collecting the book. So I'm like, well, if everyone was buying the book as they said, none of this would have been necessary because, if it wasn't broke, they wouldn't need to fix it. So I think what happened was people realized we liked Hal Jordan more than we thought. It's like you don't miss your water till your well runs dry type of thing. So seeing and keep in mind, people assumed that Ron Mars didn't like Hal Jordan. That nothing could be further from the truth. The idea was we'll bring some attention back to Hal, and we wanted to bring everything full circle, return the core, et cetera, et cetera. But what happened was, what nobody saw coming was it was very successful, and the higher-ups decided, okay, now we're going to have this big event, final night, and then Parallax is going to die, reigniting our sun. And what happens is DC is divided into offices. Like things that happen with the Batman titles, there's like a Batman office. There's a Justice League office where the big decisions for crossovers and things happen. Well, there's a Green Lantern office, but we're not on the same tier with Batman, obviously, Superman, what have you. But the hires up wanted to play with our new toy. It's like, oh, that's pretty cool. Here, because we have more authority, we're going to take this character. That's where his cape came from, and they did Zero Hour. Originally, the main villain for Zero Hour was someone else, and they're like, no, we're going to make this Parallax guy is going to be behind it. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, here I am in Columbus, Ohio, thinking, these are big decisions happening in New York City. I had something to do with that. it was good. It was bad, but then it was more good than anything else. It's just unexpected, But the thing is, you mentioned Hal turning evil. Ryan and I never thought of Parallax as evil. We thought of him as, do you remember the movie with Michael Douglas falling down?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Every time I drew Hal Jordan, I thought of defense. Mm. It's like he was just fed up more than evil. It's more like what happens when you work hard on a job and then someone that you train gets the promotion before you. How would you feel? That was our take on Parallax. He just wanted the Guardians to help recreate Coast City that was destroyed, and they wouldn't do it. And he's put his life on the line all over the universe, and he wanted one simple favor, couldn't get it, he'd had enough. That was our original take on it. Now, after Geoff Johns took it and made it that, well, it was this creature inside of him that was responsible. I mean, I understand it, that what he wanted to do, but to me that gave Hal an excuse. But we like the idea that Hal was just pushed too far, he made a mistake. And we were going to bring it full circle, but, things happened the way they did.
So can we talk about archenemies?
Archenemies.
Fatality.
Ah, fatality, fatality. Fatality came about when... This is around the time, maybe a little bit after it, Spawn was really big, and Spawn had a nemesis named Angela.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so my editor goes, we want to give Kyle and Angela. Go. I mean, that's all I had. And I'm thinking, well, since we're doing things that are a little bit different, I thought, how many black female supervillains could I name? I couldn't name any. I said, okay, so I'm going to make her look African-American. Well, not American. She's an alien. Mm-hmm. And I said, are you guys okay with that? I'm like, sure. I said, and I even gave her a home planet, Zanshi, that was destroyed in, this is a story that Mike Mignola did years ago. Name escapes. But anyway, John Stewart made a mistake, caused her planet, was destroyed. I thought, make her a survivor of that planet to give her a connection to the Green Lantern Corps, why she'd want to hunt them down. They loved it. The only thing I had to change with her design was she didn't have pointed ears at first. She said, well, remember when Mike drew that story, the Zanshians had pointed ears. So other than that, her design was pretty much the same as I originally presented. She, you know, I even gave her the big spear. You know, Angela had the big spear. I'll admit it. That was because of Angela. So that's where Fatality came from. And when I think about it, her name wasn't always Fatality. It was something else. It was not as interesting, but, you know, playing Mortal Kombat, I thought, Fatality. I'm like, that sounds like a female name. So you guys look at, so they were okay with it. So that's how she came up to be.
So some of the characters you had to design, you mentioned the longevity. Does that come as a surprise that these guys are still kicking around?
It's a surprise every day. At no point am I going, yeah, I understand why. No, that's a shock to me. Like, I mean, you mentioned Fatality. I think she's in the Star Sapphire Corps or something like that. I'm like, she's still around. I'm like, like, what? I mean, it's just, you know what I mean? Especially so many things are here today, gone today in comics. That's just how it is. But, you know, like I said, we never approached anything as a gimmick. We didn't think this is throwaway. You know, we thought, you know, it just, when you train to do something, you want to do it your best. So everything we did, we put our all into it. But sometimes things just don't stick. I mean, we've had clunkers, and it happens. But with those characters, when you create a character that you really like, chances are somebody else will. Not always. I mean, it's a gamble.
Do you check in on from time to time?
Yes. Well, I'll get a message. Like, for example, recently I got a message from Ethan Van Sciver when he showed me that Kyle's costume looks similar to his first appearance. When he first showed me, I thought it was a variant cover, like a throwback. You know, they do special covers. And I said, hey, nice throwback variant cover there. And he goes, it's not a variant. This is the costume he's going to have. Now I'm thinking, Ethan Van Sciver is one of the most talented comic artists there is. You know, he could make that costume look any way he chose because it's his book. But that's the look he wanted. That's the look he wanted. So, you know, I was beyond flattered by that.
So then after Green Lantern, you went back into commercial art and teaching, correct?
Yes. I taught from, I'd say, about 5 years. I'd stopped where, I think I stopped about 2000. You know, a growing family and just responsibilities. Something's got to go, and it's not going to be the family. So, you know, I'm going to have to streamline, and I'd stop teaching. But I would still check in on the school from time to time. The comic class that I created for them, I would visit and see how the students were doing.
When it comes to, like, the commercial art aspect of it, how does one break into that field? Because I hear about commercial artists, but being not in the industry itself, I don't know a lot about it. So...
Well, I actually, that's how I started. That actually predated the comics. But one of the things that what I wanted to do was I wanted to take my comic background and apply it to commercial art. And a lot of the work that I do actually fortunately comes because people know me from the comics. A lot of the work I do is conceptual illustration, especially for like statues or a lot of my work is for a company called the Bradford Exchange. They're a lot like the Franklin Mint. You've probably seen their work around. And if you're familiar with them, they work by subscription. And you can get add-ons through the subscriptions. They have me do a lot of like figure work. I mean, their licensed properties, I working with them, I've been able to draw everything from, you know, Charlie Brown, the Peanuts, to Nightmare Before Christmas, DC characters, Marvel characters, the NFL, McDonald. I never know what I'm going to end up doing, and I love it because what am I going to get to draw this week, you know? So the interesting thing is I've not done a lot of work for Marvel, but I have through the Bradford Exchange, which actually is, it's not just something they just do. Marvel has to approve, just like DC has to approve everything that, you know, that we do. Same with the movie properties we work on. I remember at one point, I've drawn Captain Jack Sparrow so many times, I can draw him out of my head, I'm telling you. And then I remember them going, well, okay, you know, the studio's happy with the drawing. I'm like, they're actually seeing it. Oh, yeah, if you draw an actor, their people have to approve every likeness, that sort of thing. So it's like meeting them indirectly, you know.
I guess to follow up on it, is there any character that you haven't drawn yet that you'd love to draw or work on?
Oh, yeah. Growing up, I was big on Godzilla and Gamera and Ultraman, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I would love to do a comic with characters like that, you know. Especially, I was at the Lexington Comic Con, and I met the the suit actor for Ultraman in person. Oh, yeah? And that's, I mean, that's my number one favorite con moment in my career. So, yeah, that I would say probably, you know, doing an Ultraman comic, something like that would be great.
So you mentioned the conventions. Like, how many conventions do you do in a year, would you say?
A lot. I mean, 14 easy.
Wow. So what's the strangest thing you've seen at a convention?
Oh, the strangest thing at a comic convention?
Yeah.
That's... that's hard to say. The strangest... I mean, I've been... Wow. And then what's strange?
Yeah,
I mean, it's a comic convention. It's I mean, like, it's by nature. I mean, it's strange. You know, I could see if it was happening at the drugstore or something like that, but it's a comic convention. You know, I mean, it should happen.
That's true.
So
what's the most interesting commission, even if it could be your favorite commission that anyone has ever asked you to do?
Favorite commission. Well, I there are times I'll do a commission that really challenges me beyond the norm, and I like that because it's growth. Mm-hmm. And then there are some that it's just fun to do. So I value both. I recently did a reproduction of the cover to Green Lantern 48 for a client, but it was like a modern take of if I was drawing that today. It wasn't just make it look like I did then. It's more like if I had that same assignment, what would be different? So, I mean, I put a lot more into the background because it was him kneeling in Coast City. Mm-hmm. So I put more into the perspective drawing and the architecture that I did when I did the initial one. And that was, that was a blast to do, took a little bit longer than I originally planned, but the client was very, very patient with it. But I've had the chance to draw a lot of fun stuff. I've really been blessed in that area. I remember I did the character Lilo and Stitch, the little alien creature. Yeah. Someone wanted a Stitch as Parallax, from the first appearance, like he came out of the battery. But it had the little big wheel next to him. So I enjoyed that thoroughly. So that's definitely one of my favorites.
So when looking back at the stuff you've done so far, is there anything that stands out as your favorite?
Easily. Green Lantern Silver Surfer. Hmm. That was, that type of story is why I got into comics. I remember the double page spread with the origin of the Surfer with Galactus was not in the script. I begged Ron Mars. I said, I probably won't get a chance to draw Galactus. This is my one shot. It's not a stretch to have the origin of the Surfer in this story. And he thought about it and thought about it. Yeah, we could work it in. So, I'm like, yes. So I love that. I mean, being able to draw every cosmic character that I really grew up on in a story. And then with a DC crossover at that, that's easily, one of my favorite projects I've ever done.
So is there any, I guess we kind of talked about that. Do you keep up with any comic books today?
Not on a regular basis. I mean, there are artists that I really admire that almost no matter what they do, I might find a trade paperback of it. As a huge Alan Davis fan, I might find what he's working on currently. What's another artist I really like? I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his last name. Ivan Reese? Rice?
Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce his name.
I love his stuff. Who else? Oh, there's it's more like I start with the art I like, and then if I like the character, then I'll pick it up. I'll pick up a trade paperback or an issue or two, that sort of thing. And Brian Hitch, that's another artist that I think is a phenomenal. So, I try to keep up with them as when I can.
So, and then now comic books and nerd culture and all those good things have kind of permeated our society now.
Finally. They're catching up with us.
Yeah. Is the movies and TVs and things like that, what are your favorite things in that realm, genre?
TV, I really like The Flash. I think that's great. Mainly because when I first heard there was going to be a Flash TV show, I remember the 90s show.
Oh, yeah.
And the budget constraints. Because, growing up in the 70s, I had the Lou Ferrigno Hulk and the Nicholas Hammond Spider-Man. So I didn't really have a whole lot of faith in what TV can do. But it's like kids today, if you knew how good you had it. I like the CW characters a lot. But especially The Flash, yeah. Movie-wise, I mean, the Marvel stuff is great. Haven't seen Wonder Woman yet, but I want to. I've heard nothing but good things about that.
Enjoyed that a lot. So what did you think of the Green Lantern movie?
I get that question almost more than anything else.
Really?
And I love giving the same answer. If you look at Batman, it's got successful movies, but let's look at his first appearances. Not so good. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to go back to the old serials or whatever, you got to give characters time. You know, and plus Green Lantern doesn't have the notoriety of a Batman or Superman, so they were really finding their way. When you look at the fact that that was his first live action feature, I thought it covered some good ground. I thought they tried to do too much. Mm-hmm. I would have taken out Parallax. I would have taken out Hector Hammond. I would have focused on Sinestro, mm-hmm. The Hal Jordan Sinestro rivalry, and left it at that. But see, we've got the Green Lantern Corps movie possibly coming out. Mm-hmm. I feel it's going to be a huge step forward. I really believe that.
Maybe we'll see Kyle in it.
That would be great, especially if they want to say, "Hey, you know, we owe you, $20 million for that," or something. I really love that. Or they'd be like, "Oh, you don't own the character; we don't have to give you anything." So,
lastly, from us, is there any advice that you'd like to give to aspiring artists?
Yes, don't be confused with difficulty with that it can't happen. There are artists, like I said, I met that come straight out of high school and can work at a Marvel. And you've heard of the term overnight sensation. I feel like I was the over millennium sensation. It's like it took a million years. And that was good because I had a lot to give my students who were frustrated about things. I feel like it took me longer than the average to get to what I wanted to do. So the advice I would say is get critiques that are true critiques. Now, what I mean by that is I used to tell my students all the time is you don't want a critique that sounds like something your grandmother would pat you on the back and say. When I think about Simon Cowell from American Idol, mm-hmm. You want that for your artwork. If it doesn't hurt your feelings, you didn't get a critique. Mainly, it's like lifting weights. If you lift a 5-ounce weight, you're not building any muscle, Mm-hmm. So aspiring artists need to have their work shredded, really, constructively. Mm-hmm. And too often I see young artists not getting that because if they were like me, I mean, growing up, I was a severe introvert. And so I wasn't good into sports, that sort of thing. Art was really all I had. So I didn't want to have that torn down mm-hmm. too. But it wasn't until I realized that's the only way this is going to work. That's where I started to see some progress. So that would be the number one thing besides the obvious training and that sort of thing. But I think a lot of up-and-coming artists really need to get stronger critiques, as I think was what I would put out there.
I said the last from us. I really meant the last from me. I don't know if Rick or Sam have things
that would... One thing I was just going to ask you about, a lot of the media seems to be turning into more digital stuff that people are working on. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts and feelings towards working with pen and paper or moving towards digital?
I do both. Really, in this day and age, if you're going to be a professional illustrator, you need to know your way around a computer. That's just the way of it.
Is there a particular tool, like Photoshop, or do you?
I use my favorite artistic. I like a program called Clip Studio Paint Pro. People probably know it from its original North American name, Manga Studio. The company that created it, they used to use a go-between, and that's why the name changed. So initially, I think in Japan, it was Clip Studio Paint. So now it's gone back to that. It started with someone had posted on Facebook that it was being sold at on sale for $15. I thought, I think I've heard of that. Look, let me try it. If I hate it, it was $15.
Yeah.
Because I've been using Photoshop since, 1999, I think. And I've never been able to really use any of my digital drawing tools to draw that can replicate how I draw with pen and paper. But with Clip Studio Paint Pro, I can. I don't want to sound like a commercial for them, but that's the first thing I noticed. Like, oh, this is because it was designed to create manga. I mean, down to effects, gray tones, the things you see in Japanese manga, that you can do with this program. That's how they do it. A lot of things were like, so that's how they're doing. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of aha moments as I'm using it. So I would say between that and Photoshop and maybe a couple 3D programs here and there. I like SketchUp. There's a 3D program, which is free, by the way. I'll create things. I remember when I did the Green Lantern retro comic, I created Kyle Rayner's apartment in 3D so that each panel I could just rotate the scene and just use that as my reference instead of trying to figure it out like when I was doing the book. Yeah, it was one of those, if I had this back in the 90s right, type of thing. So yeah, I really, nowadays, just if you want to do this full time, you need to have some kind of computer literacy. It's just, that's just the way of it.
Gotcha.
All right, Andy. Well, my question is,
okay.
You mentioned fatality as one of the few African-American female villains.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel when you created her with comics nowadays with diversity?
Really, diversity is a thing that it shouldn't have been something that we have to do something about. It should have been natural, but it just wasn't. Over time, I think you're realizing that no matter what people's skin color, national origin, lifestyle, what have you, there's something interesting that we can glean from a variety of sources if we just give it a chance. You know, that was in that case, it was just something that it was a character that was never supposed to be a big deal villain, so they didn't care. You know, but then you know, once again, you know, Ron and I worked our magic, and it was like, oh, you know, this, she's had multiple appearances, because like I said, we don't approach it like it's a throwaway thing.
Right.
So because of that, you know. Our thing is, if we like it, if we do something that we feel strongly about, chances are someone will feel the same. You know, it doesn't always happen, but you know, in that case, I think she kind of caught on in a way. You know,
because I think fans, when they feel that the artists and the writers like really put their time and effort into the story development, the characters and stuff, that they will hold on. And I think that's what happened with Fatality. People are like, you guys really focused on developing her and making her matter.
Yeah. She can't just be just villain number 365, right, what have you, because I think people would see right through it. And if we didn't care, chances are that not caring would transfer to those, you know, it's like, we can tell you don't care, so why should we?
Yeah.
You know? So it's interesting that, you know, I have an action figure of her. I thought it went that far. Like, it's because I'm a big toy. Anybody that follows me on Instagram, like, yeah, that's all you post is toys. it blows my mind to see, you know, something that I designed. I remember sitting in, you know, in my apartment in Columbus, Ohio, back in the 90s, designing these characters. Now they're toys, and people from other countries can buy this stuff. You know, it's just, I never take it for granted. It's never, you know, par for the course. Now I'm always, really? You know, it's, you know, to this day, it is.
Let's talk toys for a second.
Yeah, let's talk toys.
Oh, what do you collect?
I'm big on, you know, like I said, import toys from Japan, you know, Godzilla related, Ultraman related, that sort of thing. That's my number one hobby, really. That's where, I mean, I'm like, what percentage of what I made this weekend is going to go to support my habit? I wonder.
What's the crown jewel in your collection?
Oh, easily. King Ghidorah. That's the three-headed dragon that Godzilla fights.
Oh, yeah.
It's a like fully posable action figure. That's yeah, I spent some money on him. Had to have it, though. Had to have it.
All right, guys, you got anything else? We'd like to open it up.
Yeah. Any of you guys have questions? Or?
Sure. Going along with the question you had with diversity, how do you feel? Because, like, I see people complaining, like, the Doctor Strange movie, the one girl who was one of the main characters. You're complaining that
the ancient
one. They were whitewashing it with the actress instead of being the original old Asian guy. How do you feel about people who, like, aren't open to the best actor taking the spot or changing the characters? Like, the new Iron Man is a black girl and the rest. How do you feel about the adaptations you're doing on these characters?
There's different ways of looking at that. For example, like you mentioned Riri Williams, it's not like they're saying she's Tony Stark. It's more like she's just an armored character. Tony Stark is still around. There can still be an Iron Man. Whereas with the Ancient One, you know, it's not like she's another Ancient One. It's almost like it's different when you introduce a character who's supporting the character we're familiar with, as opposed to reinterpreting from the core of what we know them as. Now, I don't know about anybody else, but if you've grown up with a certain character and a certain look, that's what you expect. And you, I mean, with, I remember how bent out of shape I got with the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man having the organic webs. I'm like, no, he's supposed to have web shooters. That's wrong. Right. So, so the thing is with diversity, it has to, one, since we're talking fiction, it has to make sense and it has to have something that it really expounds with the character. Now, with the Ancient One, that was just, you know, that was just a storm of controversy that I really don't, can't really speak to why they did it. They had their reasons. I don't think it really made sense. But I think when it comes down to, you never want to have a character that's done just for diversity's sake. Like, you don't want to take a character, we're going to make this character black, we're going to make this character gay, we're going to make this character this, that, and the other, just because so we can appeal to that demographic. People are going to see through that. But if you do it, we want to tell the best story we can, and this is how we want to do it, that's what's going to connect with fans. Because let me tell you, when I worked with Judd Winnick on Green Lantern, his best friend died of AIDS. And that was a very tragic thing. And so he was a very advocate of the gay community. So he wanted to incorporate that in Green Lantern. And the problem is I was at a comic shop once, and the store owner said, the gay community took offense to being treated like a demographic. They said, we can like straight characters, you know, just like anybody else. You know, don't treat us like a demographic. I'm like, hey, I didn't write it. I just drew it. But I see your point. In other words, make a character a particular race or whatever if it makes sense for that character, not, hey, look, black people, this is your character, you know, or look, gay people, look, you know, you want to be able to make it make sense. That's the best this character should be. Because if you do it as a gimmick, just like I was talking about in the 90s, when you do things for a gimmick, people will see through that and there will be no longevity to it. But if you do it because this makes sense for this character, this is something that we want to say about this character, then people will be able to, I think, will attach to it. But if you treat it like a gimmick, whether it's diversity or anything else, it will not last. It won't. Does that make sense? Because I tend to ramble sometimes about that subject. But.
All right, any other questions? We have time for a couple more.
I've got a crazy one off the top of my head.
Okay.
Have you ever tried the 3D animation program Blender for maybe like making your backgrounds and stuff?
Yes. I use Blender, but not so much to create with, because SketchUp, I can create a lot faster. What I'll do is I'll create something in SketchUp. And with the Clip Studio Paint Pro I was talking about, I can't take something directly from SketchUp into 3D Studio Paint. So I can change the file format in Blender and then pull it into Clip Studio Paint, and I can draw over it, that sort of thing. Do you use Blender? Is that?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Blender.
All right. But that's a good question.
I got another crazy question.
Yes.
How about 3D printing? Have you tried that?
No, I have not.
It is cool.
Sounds cool and expensive. Probably a little bit out of my price range right now, but that would be awesome.
You could probably use your Blender program to make a 3D version of what you draw. Print out the wrong boy for yourself. You could actually give the company an actual model.
Oh, like give them the file and then they can create a 3D.
They might not be able to see it in three dimensional. Yeah, the .fbx files are pretty much printers, they work pretty much with a lot, most of the printers these days.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you can save as a .fbx file in Blender.
More toys for me.
Yeah. You can start out with something cheaper, like the Dremel, I think it's the Idea Builder, Dremel Idea Builder printer. Actually, it's like this wide, this tall.
For the low price of $20,000. I don't have that either. So, oh, really?
Yeah.
Make your own toys.
Ohio's helping Ohio.
Yeah, see, it's people helping people. And that's what life is all about.
That
sounds good.
It's actually pretty affordable if you get the right size. I think they sometimes
they
took on sale for
$800.
There you go.
I think about that. Thank you. Any other questions?
Excited for you to see King Ghidorah and Newcastle.
When I knew, thanks to spoilers, I knew about the cave paintings, but you know, I'm curious what origin they're going to use, because his origin has changed over the decades, you know, like so many others. So how are they going to approach it? But just, I almost don't care how, just that he's going to be in it. So, oh, yeah. Yeah. If you could be a superhero, what top power would you want to see? If I could be a superhero? I'm not a superhero. I thought I was. No, it's just art. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Beyond power of drawing. Okay. Like, what would you choose?
What kind of hero or what kind of powers?
Powers and what kind of hero?
I mean, on a serious note, I've lost some loved ones to cancer, and to be able to eliminate. I mean, I didn't want it to get all serious, but I was like, it just kind of hurts. I think about just being able to take away suffering, especially from illness. That'd be just. But I got just deeper than I meant to. But I should have said run really fast. But I'm like, that would just be able to just take that away. Because I get on Facebook and it's like, oh, you know, dad's back in the hospital or so-and-so. And I'm like, I would just love to be able to say, gone. Now come home to your family, you know. And wow, I almost wish I'd brought that up because, yeah, wow. Okay. Super speed. Let's go. I wish I could run really fast. Yeah, forget about what I just said. Yeah, let's go with lighthearted. So.
All right, well,
yeah, we'll wrap things up here.
I believe a costume contest is about to break out in here, so yeah. We'll wrap things up. I just want everyone to give Daryl Banks a hand.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for being here.
Real pleasure talking.
Oh, I had a blast, always. Thank you very much. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone, for coming.
All right. Enjoy the rest of the show. Thank you.